Welcome to Cloud at Microsoft, Subject Matter Expert, or SME Roundtable. I'm Sherry Bettin, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. I'm here with some of our cloud SMEs who have built cloud-based solutions to run Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and get candid answers. The Skype Q&A window is now open for you to ask questions, so please start submitting your questions. And we also have taken questions in advance, and I have that list I'll be pulling from. We're going to start with our SMEs introducing themselves. Ken.
Hi, I'm Ken Knight. I'm an enterprise architect in Microsoft IT. I've been working on the cloud for about 5 or 6 years. And involved in developing the IT strategy to move all of our portfolio to the cloud.
Charlie?
Yep. I'm Charlie Tran. I'm an engineering program manager in Microsoft IT. I'm an owner for an application that manages the business approvals here at Microsoft. What's relevant for this course would be that it's a PaaS application in Azure, and it's been running, we've been running it in PaaS for several years now.
Okay. Eric.
Yeah, hi, I'm Eric Slippern. I'm a principal software design engineer with our HRIT engineering team. And I've been working for the last 5 years to move a lot of our HRIT portfolio out to the cloud, and that's been a mix of migrating some on-prem applications as well as designing some new solutions for the cloud in the PaaS model, platform as a service.
David.
I'm David Leff. I'm a network architect in Microsoft IT and the Enterprise Infrastructure Services team. I've been with Microsoft now for almost 17 years and working about the same time on cloud as Ken, doing some of the fundamental connectivity enablement to allow us to get to the cloud efficiently.
Okay. Kevin.
My name is Kevin. I am a service engineer here in Microsoft IT. I run a lot of businesses that's responsible for anything from running our paychecks to running our manufacturing facilities. To also getting Xboxes to our users that are waiting impatiently at home.
All right, thank you. We will make every effort to get through all of your questions today, but if we don't, we'll stay back in the studio and continue answering questions on film. As we post this video at the end of the session, we will post with the extended footage. So with that, we'll go to our first question. Ken, the first one for you. What do you see as a key focus for Microsoft Cloud adoption going forward?
Microsoft's key focus is moving from moving all of our on-premise to the cloud, and now we're focusing on moving up the stack from IaaS to PaaS. The efficiencies, the speed at which we can do business, the speed at which we can chew the IT backlog for our project teams is unparalleled in PaaS. And with all of the wonderful PaaS services we've released, the amount of capabilities that we have access to that we can integrate with for our solutions also will greatly accelerate our ability to do business. So that's our focus right now, is primarily to accelerate that cloud adoption and leverage PaaS and SaaS.
Okay. We've been doing this for a while, so we've gotten past a lot of the cultural concerns.
We've gotten, yes, we are over the cultural concerns. We are totally 100% committed to moving to the cloud. But the easy, low-hanging fruit has been IaaS, and now we're trying to move up.
Okay, great. The next question we have is for Eric. We have a large number of applications which each have their own web services. How can Azure help us enable new consumers of these services?
Okay, I think what you really want to look at is the Azure API management service here. So this is something we haven't really talked about as much as we should. I think it's a really powerful PaaS offering for us. And what it allows you to do is import your existing API into API management, and then that gives consumers of your service a consistent cloud-based method to discover securely onboard to those. It also gives you, there's a developer portal, so you can just go click on the service method you want to call, and it gives you a code sample with documentation, you know, whether you're using Java, JavaScript, PHP, Ruby, Python, even C Sharp. And we've used this actually in HRIT for the employee experience app that we built, and this is a mobile experience that brings in data from payroll, performance management, feedback, vacation, pay stub, 401k benefits, and the team building this, if they had to do that all themselves, they'd go out and interface with all those different applications, figure out how to onboard to those services, securely call them, it would have been, you know, a huge amount of work. But what we did was just bring those all in under API management, have a HR services catalog out there in the cloud, and then the clients can just go to that one place, securely discover all those services, and wire up that experience.
Sounds like it has a lot of out-of-box capabilities.
Absolutely.
So it's a lot less work than building it yourself.
Yep. Oh, and I did want to also add, there's even a premium offering now for that enables you to talk to your on-prem services as well. So you don't even actually have to go put your services up in the cloud to take advantage of this.
Yeah, it totally rocks. There's also the subscription. You know all the subscribers, right? So that if you have a change or anything and you want to email them all, you know all the constituents who have subscribed to your API.
Yeah. It gives you monitoring on top of that. You can throttle. You can do there's a caching layer. And I also want to mention you can do even translation. You can configure. So if you've got an old SOAP-based service, you can, just through configuration in the API management portal, you can expose that and send back JSON data, make it a REST-based API. Really cool stuff.
It really rocks.
Yeah, sounds great. Next question for Kevin. What are some of the engineering principles you use as you move from on-prem to the cloud?
Traditionally, as we engineer our services, we had a lot of behaviors where we think that capacity is infinite, like that's how we started, right? And then capacity stopped being infinite as we start managing our on-premise capacity a little bit more closer. So then we go to the cloud, and the cloud's promise of elastic capacity, and you hear about the huge volumes of services out there, and our kind of engineers got into this thought about, hey, it's infinite again. And then there's other thoughts about, hey, the cloud, you know, as promised, it should be fully resilient, it should be disaster recovery capable, it should be all these good things. And then we quickly discovered that is not the case, you know. So some of the engineering principles, you know, always assume that your infrastructure is going to fail. You know, always assume that don't assume that the cloud is going to give you, you know, all the capabilities that will meet your specific business demands. It does provide a lot of good foundations, but there are going to be custom tailored demands and features and services that you need to build yourself very easily to satisfy your own business.
And you have to build your apps more resiliently.
Absolutely.
Right? And that is one of the core things we've learned about moving to the cloud.
It is a different way of looking at how an application developer manages its service across the infrastructure. Before, we would focus on making few servers as resilient as possible. Mm-hmm. And now going to the cloud, now we have to understand that we need to have the same level of resiliency through many more, a wider range of services or servers. So that's fundamentally a shift in the way an engineer will look at developing between the old on-premise and the new cloud world.
And there's not a person you can call in the data center that's going to do anything for you.
No, that is true. But Azure, the Azure portals, management portals allows for a lot of ways you can manage your own capacity, IaaS, PaaS, and I really can't think of a reason why you would want to call the Azure infrastructure.
Right. I mean, that's a good thing.
Exactly,
you know, that's
a really
good
thing.
But we really want to be thinking scale out instead of scale up, right?
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up for Charlie. What are some specific challenges your team has faced leveraging Azure PaaS?
Well, basically, I think the one thing we ran into early on was not right-sizing the service level offerings that we were subscribed to for each one of the PaaS services that our application was using. Mm. You know, we started off as kind of this experimental project. So, you know, we chose all these, the lowest tier. We didn't, you know, it was a very much a test or sort of a small audience using our app. And so, you know, free tier, lowest tier possible is great. And then we started expanding our user base and expanding and scaling out our services to you know, higher traffic volumes and whatnot. And what we found was that, oh, it looked, you know, things would break in production. And at the time, you know, I think it may be better now. Azure didn't provide, or at least we were not as familiar with what were the things. Azure didn't like sound a red alert, you know, when something was hitting the traffic. It wasn't like, you know, it gave you a big red banner somewhere or a big red, you know, like alarm coming out of your office saying, you know, you're going to hit the traffic volume here or something. It just stopped working. Mm. And so, you know, we found that when we looked deeper, that we were like, oh, you know, we're way over traffic on quota, or at least the support team would tell us, you're actually way over traffic on quota for this thing, and that's why your app stopped working. And it's hard to learn the lesson of that you need to up your service levels when you're in production and something broke. So, you know, the thing we learned from that is that we went through right after that and looked through every service level for every component we were using, web services, mobile services, SQL Azure, all those things, because they're actually not all connected. You could choose a lower level here and an enterprise level there and something else here. So, you know, we went through that exercise. And what I would say we learned from that was, you know, we really need to get a good hand on what we need, the service level that you need, you know, as best you can. And if you don't know at all, you have no idea, then, you know, we try to be conservative, and we said we'll up it to like a premier level or super premium level, pay a little bit at the beginning, and then track our traffic and track our data quotas over like a couple months. And then we kind of saw, okay, this is kind of the level we need, and then we would either go stay there or we'd go lower. And so that's kind of one thing I wish somebody had told me before we started saying, oh, we're going to expand our user base. We're going to drive traffic now.
So now you would start high, mm-hmm. and then you would right-size down, where your experience was you started low mm-hmm. and had to right-size up.
Right, because the one that you don't want is you don't want your users impacted by a service interruption due to, you know, just due to the fact that you didn't choose the right service tier.
Right.
You know, so.
But the good news is, if you do have that experience, you can still scale up,
and
so you can manage it. It's going to the monitoring tools, looking at what you're consuming and making adjustments.
And exactly. And that's what we do today. You know, we found we had some issues with you know, not being able to support certain levels of traffic, and so we still scaled up. We scaled up pretty far. And now we're actually doing another exercise again to sit down and say, oh, how many are we using? We find that we're using about half of the capacity that we needed, so we can scale back down. And, you know, you can actually build in the capability to auto-scale even and have Azure do the work for you and scale up and scale down on demand based on traffic levels.
So. And pay for only what you need.
Absolutely.
And only what you use. Mm-hmm. Very good. Next question. David, corporate connectivity is needed as most companies move portions of their portfolio to the cloud. What do you see for corporate connectivity going forward?
Hmm. Going forward, connectivity has already changed. So the old patterns that we used to have between a building or a campus and an on-prem data center or a lab, and then the patterns we saw for application-to-application connectivity within a well-connected local area network with very low latency and tons of bandwidth, those have shifted from a client perspective. Now that traffic is no longer staying on our intranet, private networks, it's going to the internet for the modernized applications and when we're actually leveraging public cloud services. We still have to build some private connectivity to be able to migrate some of the legacy applications up into Azure on IaaS and preserve kind of that private connectivity with ExpressRoute. We also need to provide hybrid connectivity between applications that span cloud and on-premises or multiple service models. So we have a lot of applications that, you know, aren't, you know, a handful of instances. They are dozens or hundreds, and they span IaaS, PaaS, even SaaS. So the connectivity models themselves, not only for productivity applications, but now line of business apps and even engineering applications have changed dramatically. And our enterprise network wasn't designed for that. So our internet edges were not designed for that. Mm. We've had to modify the existing infrastructure. We've had to actually add new services as well, like hybrid connectivity over ExpressRoute.
And you probably had to learn this as we went along.
Learn it as we go along, because we were adopting as they were building these technologies, and these technologies continue to change. And as Ken said, you know, we're changing the patterns that we're using when we're actually moving applications up there or designing new applications. We, IaaS had a low barrier to adoption, so, and we had some sense of urgency to move things to off, you know, from on-premises to IaaS and Azure. Now we're shifting to PaaS and shifting to SaaS, and we're continuing to just, you know, continuing to change the connectivity model, add new services, take old ones away.
And I don't think it was obvious to us what patterns were going to emerge.
It wasn't obvious in some respects. We weren't in control of those adoption patterns. So the business moved, you know, without telling IT or without planning with IT in some cases. And we just simply saw things change in the environment and had to react to it. We're getting better about talking to the business about, you know, what is your roadmap? What are you planning to do going forward? And trying to get out in front of that.
Okay, good deal. Ken, next question for you. We have seen culture play a large role in corporate adoption of the cloud. How has Microsoft's culture changed, and what do you see as needed going forward?
Microsoft culture has evolved dramatically in the past, I'd say, 6 months. But in the first, like, 3 or 4 years of cloud adoption, people were server hugging, and the culture changed when our leadership started establishing metrics and monitoring every single one of the divisions to move to the cloud. And so that started chipping away slowly at the iceberg, if you will, and moving it towards warmer waters. And we've pretty much melted that away. It took about a year and a half for the attitude of all the groups to become cloud positive, to say everything needs a plan to the cloud to actually do that. We still have a few people kicking and screaming, and we still have a few significant challenges. But for the most part, that culture change needed leadership backing. The culture going forward is this new culture we have called One Microsoft. And there's a whole bunch of change inside Microsoft that is enabling rapid cloud adoption, rapid PaaS adoption. And it's not just about cloud. It's about opening up all of Microsoft for the better of everyone in Microsoft. And I didn't believe it at first. I was very skeptical. But I'm starting to see it happen. We formed a PaaS team, a working group. David is helping us out on that team just recently to accelerate PaaS adoption. Every single person did not come kicking and screaming. They all came willingly. They're all contributing willingly. They're all giving up extra time because they believe in it. I don't have to get so much management buy-off. This thing's just happening. Eric talked about the APIs. We're starting to see Git adoption all throughout Microsoft. People are getting it. And they're starting to use that. And now the code is opened across all of Microsoft for people to search, discover, and help. And if you don't like someone's API because it has an issue, you can go and check it out, do a pull request, and update it. People are empowered to work on any problem in the ecosystem. This is going to help you with your approval app. Mm-hmm. And so the culture is changing dramatically. It started with Satya, more openness, with supporting more open protocols, adoption of Git, the tooling and technology, the app tier, the VSO from an engineering perspective. All of this has allowed us to feel far more empowered, everyone, and the culture's changing. So that One Microsoft culture is a culture I'd love to see all customers embrace and extend as well.
So it sounds like in that, maybe there's more sharing or building upon what others have done before and not build it yourself. Are we doing more of that here at Microsoft?
Beginning to.
Okay.
We're beginning to. There's still a great fear for taking dependencies of other teams in Microsoft, even if it's a product team. There's still a fair bit of cowboyness, and we want to reinvent it here because then you don't have any dependencies. Risk aversion. There's still some of that. It's going to take, I would say, about a year where people start getting the patterns down of, of looking into other people's repositories, seeing the source code, trusting that it will be there, that they can play a part with it, where before the code was not accessible, so they didn't trust it. They didn't trust the API would be there going forward. So that takes time, right? I mean, Eric, you have the same experience happening now in HRIT, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's super empowering to be able to look out into the one IT VSO and just see what's going on across all the teams and really understand the scope of work and the opportunities that you may not have been aware of. I mean, lots of times, you know, I'm in HRIT, I had no idea what's going on in some of the other kind of siloed organizations, but that one IT VSO is really helping to break that down.
Have you found anything out there that you've wanted to leverage and bring into your team?
I can't think of a specific one today, but yeah.
You're hopeful. All right. Good deal. So, next question. Kevin, how does the cloud enable you to deliver value faster and with quality?
Good question. So whenever I think about the cloud, it's a component to our overall modern engineering transformation. So it's all interconnected. You really can't say that, hey, just by adopting a new piece of technology, it's going to enable you to deliver those values faster. You just can't. So in addition, we spoke a lot about the culture shift that we needed. There's also changes in processes, more toward the optimization. You know, we have seen ourselves adopting a lot of new methodologies, such as Agile, Kaizen, and also a lot of Six Sigma to make sure that our consistencies is more consistent. Our processes is more consistent. In terms of the cloud, you know, you see a lot of self-serve open APIs that we've talked about before. There's a lot of services that's already out there pre-created for you, right? You heard things about machine learning, Azure, you know, App Insights for telemetry. You have Azure Data Lake or Cosmo for storage. So there's a huge collection of services out there so that, you know, back when I was going to college, to start my C++ program was a MD Notepad. You know, that was interesting, and we got really good at it. And now, fast forward to today, you don't start with something empty. Matter of fact, I think it's a little bit more wasteful. You know, as a developer, you start pointing in these services that's available in Azure and to create your fundamental pieces, and then you just kind of add the rest of the 15-20% that's missing, and you can get something very quickly, very awesome, just rocks the, you know, rocks the pants off of your business very quickly. So I would say that, yes, that's a whole combination of things, and the cloud, Azure, is definitely a huge part of it.
And in the old days, we have to build write code for all of those pieces, and now we just select the pieces that we want and build a minimum amount of code.
Yep,
so that's exactly One way we're getting faster.
Yes.
Guy, Application Insights, the example you had, is just a checkbox.
Do you want it or not?
I click the checkbox. The script runs in the background, does God knows what.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, boom, I've got all the telemetry for my application right on my Azure portal. It's just amazing.
And I know Charlie's used it for MS App.
Yeah, for us, it's a little bit more involved than a checkbox because you do have to insert, although they give you kind of all the code snippets you need to throw in. You do need to put the code snippets into your application
for additional telemetry.
But yeah, I mean, there's a set of basic telemetry you do get, and it's been very useful for us. We really like it, and it's really amazing the amount of change.
What have you pulled out of it?
Yeah, we're able to pull out what we use it to create kind of a live dashboard in sorts. You know, we're able to see where our traffic levels are coming from, what browsers, what OSs, what's our traffic patterns, where do we see usage most often.
Do you know which features of your application are used the most?
We track it by page, so we've kind of segmented our features by page, and we track it kind of how many page hits you get, you know, kind of like any other website would, and we do know which pages get hit the most, what your users tend to do. We know that they come in and do, you know, we can almost track it to almost a user session level. How many people come in? How many approvals do you do at once? We see that traffic's, we actually, you know, derived an interesting pattern that we have two groups of users. Kind of a manager who has maybe multiple approvals, but not that many of them over a period of a month. and then who comes to our app every once in a while and does a few things and leaves. And then there's the power users who basically do approvals as a job. And so they come to our application, and they're there for a long time. They're there for every day. They're doing hundreds of approvals a month. So we have these two disparate users, not a lot in the middle. So they ask different things of us. And so that's kind of what we're like, why are we getting so many of these disparate asks? You know, make this really power user friendly. No, make it simpler, you know, as kind of, you know.
So what's the answer?
You have to find a balance, you know, and for us, it's something we're still trying to figure out, how you make power users happy because they're loud, even though there's not as many of them, versus kind of the more simple use cases where, you know, we get a lot of these, who are also voices can be very loud. Because they're usually people who are executives and who don't have to approve things. But when they approve things, they want a great experience, and they don't submit a ticket to your support team.
And they don't want to read a manual.
No.
They want it to be so simple that they know how to do it without having done it several times.
Exactly
before.
Right. And so, you know, what we tend to find is that we're like, okay, so we kind of have like a power user mode now almost. Like you can turn on a power, like there's a view specifically for a power user. Uh-huh. And then we have a simpler view that we expose to everybody. And if you want that, you can dig a little bit. You'll find it. But
that way you can optimize for each type user that you have.
We try. That's kind of, I think, where we're probably going to have to go a little bit. You just can't create one that's just, it's hard. It's
right.
A big challenge to create one that just hits both simplicity and all the complexities a power user wants. Mm-hmm. So.
What about creating two? Create two. A power user one?
Oh, yeah, that's what we're doing.
And
yeah.
Okay.
So I got to add one more thing on App Insights, though, too. That's been, I think that's my favorite Azure feature, by the way, as a developer, just to be able to see all that information and down to a stack trace and know which exact line in my SQL query that was 20 steps down the stack. It's awesome. But it's also a huge enabler for our DevOps evolution, right? Mm-hmm. On-prem, we would have to jump through a bunch of hoops just to get to the service engineer we needed to talk to look at the event log on our server. And now we've built the Power BI dashboards on top of our App Insights data, and not only extended that to the development team, but also to our customers. So our customers can go look and see themselves how the site's performing, how their features are being used, and things like that. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. Mm-hmm. In the past, we'll have our software engineers come to the service engineers, try to knock down our door and say, "Give me the right telemetry data that I need." Today, there's still some of that behavior, as you heard previously, there's some stragglers. But the answer is now changed. Instead of saying, who are you, what do you need the data for, who will give you the data, now the answer is basically, well, why didn't you code in these telemetry and these tags in your application that will give that to you. Matter of fact, if you want to go back to your desk and put those telemetry pieces in there using, go ahead and do it. You know, and matter of fact, a lot of the service engineers now are saying that, you know, we want you to do A/B, we want you to do feature tagging, we want you to do continuous development. You know, so when we go from design, build, test, and deploys, that cycle now is like we got weekly sprints happening that make changes really quickly. So all that plays into moving faster.
And the power's in their hands. They want it.
Absolutely.
They can make it happen.
Yep. And not to mention that it's that real time monitoring that App Insights and Azure allows. Like, there are many instances where our business loves it, or at least, they would see, you know, it used to be kind of like they email me or they email somebody, an engineer on the team, like, we're hearing about this, and they're like, we don't know how big of an issue this is, but we're hearing enough about it that it's like this probably one issue. And then what happens is now we've built these dashboards and we just expose it and we let them in on the same telemetry that we use through Power BI.
Brilliant.
And they sit down, they're like, oh, you know, it's not as big as we thought.
It's a little spike.
Yeah, it's a little spike. So, you know, they can understand, they can calibrate, they can, talk to whoever's ringing the alarm bells and manage it just like we can, so that we're not spending our time running around chasing fires as much, and we're focused on that engineering. And so, it's so amazing. Just we expose that, we let them see that, and it's very, I wouldn't say it's calming, but it gives them a lot of perspective. Like, oh, you know, we see these traffic levels, we see what you guys are doing, we see that there's not really that the issues we
less
see.
Fire drills.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know when there really is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows, exactly.
Okay, great. Next question for you, David. How do I secure my service and data tiers from the open internet in Azure?
don't think there's any one single answer to that. There's many, many ways you can do it. It depends on what service model you're using. But Azure itself offers protections on the public side if you want to actually publish your service to the internet. Now, recently, we've introduced network security groups that have fairly simple rule set to be able to govern traffic patterns, both internal, but then also external to the public side as well. We also have features in virtual networking now that if your compute service is connected to a virtual network, you can create user-defined routes that will forward your traffic to a virtual appliance of your choice. So you can use traditional zone-based firewalling. You can use web application firewalls, application-based, basically layer 7 type of firewalls. A whole host of, you know, new virtual appliances that do a lot, that perform a lot of the same capabilities that we had when we were on premises and trying to publish services to the internet, we can do in the cloud as well, either via, you know, native Azure networking capabilities or now this partner ecosystem that's emerging as well. What we've done internally is, you know, we've treated some of the legacy applications a little differently than the PaaS applications. When we're talking PaaS or SaaS, one of the keys to access control really isn't necessarily network protection. It's identity, strong identity checking. That really provides the best end result in terms of access control. And then if you integrate with things like Azure Active Directory, you get very rich policies you can enforce, like strong multi-factor authentication. You can do very rich auditing. You can do a lot of controls down closer to the application functions and even on the data itself that you're concerned with.
And that's when we've re-architected an application and we can take advantage of the identity.
Correct.
And access.
The old applications that were just simply doing lift and shift from the on-prem data centers, they were behind kind of the crunchy shell of our, you know, corporate internet edge. They didn't know how to protect themselves. We did it with the infrastructure. But as we move up to, you know, up the more mature service models from IaaS to PaaS, that functionality is shifting into the application itself, self-protecting data, and we're moving away from using infrastructure as the control or using traditional network means as the control to identities becoming the control.
So for the older stuff that we may have just migrated to IaaS, what do we do?
We've done something that is very traditional. We moved it up into IaaS on virtual networks. We put firewalls and load balancers and passive ways to harvest the traffic to send it to devices like data loss prevention devices, intrusion detection, those sorts of things. So we've carried a lot of the traditional network protections up into Azure to service the legacy IaaS migration population. Mm-hmm. We're starting to shed those a bit.
As we do more and more PaaS.
As we do more and more PaaS and more SaaS as well.
Okay. Perfect. Next question. Eric, I believe this belongs to you. I have a SQL database that I want to move to the cloud. What is my best way to do this?
The best way? Well, it depends. I mean, if you just want to move a database out to the cloud, it's a matter of just, you know, take your on-prem database, export it as a backpack out to blob storage, and then import it into SQL Azure. You can do that through a wizard even with the newest SQL Server Management Studio, and the data's out there. The better answer, though, is to probably look at what your storage requirements are in light of the cloud storage options you have in the cloud. A lot of the times, you may have some non-relational data that you're keeping in SQL Azure that would be better served to put out into blob storage or DocumentDB, something like that, out in the cloud. I think, you know, as a longtime SQL developer, I think, you know, our SQL Server was our hammer and every application was our nail, and that's the tool that we use. So I think there's huge opportunity to, you know, reduce costs and increase your scalability by leveraging all the full cloud storage platform.
That sounds like the PaaS
answer. Yeah.
You need to re-architect your data like you need to re-architect your app to get the most efficient use.
Yep. Now you can just go out and get a SQL Server VM as well, and that can be in IaaS, and that can be a great option for folks. But the truth is, right now, there's very little capability gap between what you get out of the SQL Server box product and the SQL database service in the cloud. And at this point, the product group has been very open that every new feature they're building now is coming to SQL database before it comes to the box offering. So I'd really encourage everyone to look at SQL database as a priority.
And that's Azure SQL?
Yep.
What about SQL Data Warehouse? How do you see and that playing?
Yeah, that's a brand new offering, and that's I think if you're looking at a data warehousing solution, yeah, definitely go there first, because that's taken away tons of the complexity of, you know, managing disks and partitions and all that. You know, you don't want to have a PhD DBA to manage your SQL data warehouse for you. Just go with the Azure solution.
It has a lot of the resiliency baked into the product, and a lot less friction for scalability.
Yep.
In SQL Data Warehouse. So I would recommend looking at that first.
Absolutely.
So you have a low effort solution, which is similar to IaaS, where you just port your data over.
Lift and ship,
but
yeah.
But then you have the more efficient use of lots of
Yeah, and actually, but unlike some of the IaaS to PaaS stuff, it's really easy to get your data into SQL database, Azure SQL database. Like I said, you can just take a backup of your on-prem SQL database and import it into the cloud, and you're there. So it's not as high a barrier as it is to get from IaaS to PaaS and some
easier.
Of the other systems. Yeah.
Very good. Okay, next question. Oh, Charlie. How does your team handle the security around HBI, SOX, and sensitive information in the cloud?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, when we started off as a PaaS application, SOX and HBI were not certified yet for the cloud. This was several years ago. And so what we did at that time was we said, if you're a SOX application, well, one, if you're an HBI application, don't send us HBI data, because we can't store that where we are. And so not yet at the time. And then for SOX, the thing about it is that our application is kind of interesting in that it abstracts a lot of the rules. And, you know, because we're kind of an approvals platform, we just serve focus as kind of being this front-end layer for users as a hub for approvals. So we told our tenants or our services that they handle the logic behind it. Like, if you're an expense app, you can integrate with us and show your expenses that require approval. But when the actual action and processing occurs, it happens on your on-prem, you know, piece or your side of the fence, so to speak. And so therefore, you know, SOX was okay because we weren't SOX, because we didn't host these business rules mm-hmm. that were required for processing these things. So it's interesting now, though, because now all those applications we talked to in the past integrating with us, they're all moving to IaaS or PaaS, which are all getting certified for SOX and HBI. They're either already certified or they're very close to. So at some point for us, we could manage that too. But it's interesting, just from a philosophical perspective, it's a lot easier if we don't, if our application mm-hmm. does not manage that. So it's kind of interesting to see that shift. For us, that's, you know, besides just using the standard encryption across, you know, in transit and when it's stored and all that, you know, that's how we managed it before. And even now, especially, it's going to be less of an issue with the certifications and with this, Microsoft moving very quickly to the cloud.
You brought up a point about MS approvals, mm-hmm. where you have tenants. Mm-hmm. And really, what I love about MS approvals is it showed that you can build a modern app experience with legacy systems. Mm-hmm. You don't have to rebuild your legacy systems to get that modern app experience on your phone, tablet, or desktop. Mm-hmm. So. You just brought that up, made me think about one of the beautiful things about your application.
Yeah. And it was great for us, because it was great for Microsoft at the time, because what we could do is we could abstract, you know, all these on-prem experiences at the time. You know, we could abstract it up a layer and then move that to the cloud, and we could do it quickly, and then it was easy to manage, and it showed the power of the cloud. And then at the same time, you know, people didn't have to go all these different places. They didn't have to be on VPN. So we got a lot.
They didn't have to rebuild all these legacy applications. They can do it on their own time versus on being mandated to.
And right, now they're catching up. Now essentially everybody's moving to the cloud, so we're all going to be, you know, friends up in the cloud.
Yeah.
And one of the tenants that you heard mentioned, Expense, I actually own that application. And to answer your question from a different angle is that, you know, we started this cloud journey about 5 years ago. And about 4 years ago, we had like 1.2% adoption in the cloud. Because what we actually saw 4 years back was people hit behind those things like, oh, you mean to say that Cloud IaaS is not HPI certified? I cannot put my personally identified data in this PaaS solution. Oh, because of that restriction, then nothing in my portfolio can go.
Yeah.
You know, so
it was their argument to say, not me, not now.
Exactly. And we call those people the Pebble Watchers. Right? and that means that if I have this beautiful, brand new, just paid 4-lane highway, and we all get Ferraris, okay? But some buyer will say, well, what about that little tiny pebble that's left on the road? If I hit it just at the right angle, it could fly up and say, you know, nail Dave right in the side of the head or something, right? But, and then we go, okay, guys, seriously? You know, you're going to let one out of 300 applications tell you that nothing of your portfolio can go? And that's the moment we got really serious and say, hey, you know what? Instead of saying, because of these things I cannot do, as professionals, Microsoft pay me to say, because of these complexities that's in the cloud, here's how I'm going to solution my approach to actually be able to go into the cloud. Because it's a chicken and egg thing. A lot of things in the cloud wasn't there 4 years ago. Mm. Well, how did they get there in the first place today? It's because we got people that solutioned around some of the restrictions in the past, and we injected features into our cloud product groups, and now they made it better for us. Mm-hmm. And we come back and readdress some of those things to make our services run even faster, integrate better, more secure. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a cyclic thing that you just have to take that first leap of faith.
You got to start somewhere.
Exactly.
There's the first few PaaS applications that got to the cloud, Eric was actually part of one of them. It got an exception from our CIO that he would assume the risk of putting those things in the cloud. And it was our employee review process that went up there, and so there's some PII in there. The first application that got up to the cloud on PaaS that passed our risk and compliance board rating was our Microsoft Azure BizTalk service. And this is where all of our money flows in and out of the company. So all of our partners send money through this process, very risky. I worked diligently with that team and our security team over the course of 2 weeks to come up with a prescription for all of the security controls, and it passed the board. It didn't pass with flying colors, but it passed. And so it is now in production, and it was an example of one of our first PaaS things that were allowed to go into production because of the controls. You talked about some of the experiences, the Pebble people. I love that. That's just wonderful. This culture is not there right now in our move to PaaS. Our security team now is proactively going through every one of the PaaS services and using Microsoft's requirements, Microsoft internal policies, and making sure that those things are compliant. Not only are they making sure it's compliant with the new Azure Resource Manager as a preferred method for deploying new applications, they're creating configuration scripts to make sure that they're secure and working with the engineering teams to bake it into our engineering process. Mm-hmm. And so going forward, these things are secure. We're going to make them even better and have templates for that.
And we're having very different conversations.
Yes.
It is very exciting. It's a very exciting world to be in today.
It's accelerating.
Do we have any more Pebble people?
No.
No.
Just put it at that.
They've been strong on board.
Yes, they are now on board.
We're rock and boulder people now. But Kevin hinted at something that's very important. You know, we've gotten very good at identifying where there are actually deficiencies in the product, deficiencies in process, deficiencies in our own applications. And you know, gauging the impact of those things, deciding whether they're legitimate or not legitimate first, gauging the impact of those things, articulating that problem back to our own management so they understand, you know, where we can go and where we can't go, and then getting those things tracked and resolved. So it's very, there's a very stringent process around that now. It's becoming almost mechanical.
Right, and we in IT were able to shape the product.
Yes. Yep.
And that feels very good. We made sure that it was ready.
Yep. And you know, to follow on what Dave says, that Microsoft, we were known to be very self-critical and also critical of each other's products. You know, we won't hesitate to point out a deficiency in, say, Windows 98, you know. And one of the things I was brought up earlier in the early conversation was the concept of DevOps. You know, and the concept of DevOps in IT, the way the Microsoft, we've defined it, is that fundamentally it's a culture shift to one where we want to eliminate barriers. You know, me, myself, as a service engineer, I have people on my team that can function as a product group engineer or EPM, you know, across Microsoft. And with that, you know, with that culture shift, that push for the sole focus of creating great user experiences, you see a lot of efforts now, such as how can IT help our product group, our business groups, optimize their processes, make their product better. You know, we don't just say, hey, since you're not HBI, PII, I'm never going to use your services. Mm-hmm. Instead, now the approach is sort of a, hey, how can I help to make this even better? And in areas where I can take a leap of faith and not get that 100% certification, maybe get that 80% certification, mm-hmm. I'm willing to go. Let's take that leap of faith and let's make the product better.
And we're even providing resources that are co-developing with the product team now.
That's very cool. In many
circumstances, not just one isolated one. We've been doing it with the Windows Development Group. We've been doing it with Azure. So it's across the board, there's that spirit of one Microsoft, exactly like what you're talking about. And that's just accelerating. I mean, not only does PaaS accelerate, but this culture is accelerating too.
Well, from that, the product group gets the benefit of an enterprise organization exercising their product.
Yep. Exactly.
And giving real-time feedback.
Yep. Exactly.
So it works for both sides.
And you can't complain anymore because now you're going to be asked to fix it.
You're part of the solution. So you've mentioned DevOps, and I know that the transition of job roles has been a big thing for the organization in moving to the cloud. So who would like to comment about DevOps on their team and how individuals or teams have taken to it? And was there any resistance?
Yeah, for us, our team actually has been, you know, we're not at the forefront per se, but we've been experimenting definitely with the DevOps model. We have some service engineers, but we actually bring them in to our team. We run them. They're part of our stand-ups. They're part of our engineering cycles. They're the same thing as a software engineer now. And our software engineers jump in. And we had our software engineers, you know, troubleshooting operations problems. It's not like this is a service engineering issue or this is a software engineering issue or that's their team's responsibility, that team's responsibility.
It's everybody's job.
It's all of our responsibility. It's even my job. I get to own the end-to-end. So if there's something that goes wrong, I'm on the call with everyone else too. So, you know, in the end, you know, the whole point is that we're all one team in charge of a service end to end. And it doesn't matter who has to do what. You know, you'd like to have the best person who knows the best, most expertise working on the whatever they need to work on. So, you know, then everyone else just pitches in where we need to. So, you know, for us, like I said, we actually have gotten to the point where we say, yeah, he's a service engineer by title right now, possibly, you know, and he may report to somebody different. But he's on our team, and we've actually say he's going to do software engineering stuff. The software engineering team will say, we're going to do some service engineering stuff. And eventually the lines blur and it's just, we're all an engineering team.
In a year to 18 months, service engineer title go away. It'll all be software engineer.
We're all engineers,
yeah.
Period. Yeah.
And then that shift has started as we move our centralized operations into each of the services directly. And we have a strong realignment to service focus across IT, across the company. And so that's starting to happen.
And this is where the value of IT really shines in this new modern, the world that we're in today. And what I mean by that is that, you know, what organization in Microsoft has over 30 years of running a SaaS service? It's actually IT. Believe it or not, to our business who uses a portal, you know, either for expense or approvals, 30 years ago, that portal may run on an on-premise hardware. Today, that portal runs on a PaaS solution. But to them, that portal is still the same portal. You know, we are one of the most experienced groups in Microsoft that knows how to run that service, how to have the right expectations, set the right SLAs that meets those business demands. And what you see now is that you see a lot of either product groups or business groups come to IT and say, how can you guys help us? Or the direct transition of groups within IT to those product groups. You know, example would be our universal store. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of IT experts and talents that are just streaming that way to help that area being successful.
We've aligned a lot of the commerce IT groups to be into the product group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's going on. It's one Microsoft.
Yeah. Good question.
Okay, great. We are nearing the end of our hour, so I want to make sure I ask our SMEs one final question, and we'll start with you, Kevin. We've worked with cloud technologies for several years now, so what is the one tip or technique you would like our customers to take away with them today about your particular cloud area?
Sure. I would say that don't look at cloud as a technology. Look at it as a collection of services that you can innovate, both from a business, all the way from a business to a technology perspective. I'll tap into an example that was just talked about. How do you move SQL into cloud? One of the challenges that's specifically in my space right now is, how do you challenge that thinking of the traditional three-tier application? What would happen if you actually remove the data tier? Because what I've run large ERPs, I've run small ERPs, and one of the things that kept me up at night a lot of times is, will my database fail? Because that's a pretty big single point of failure. And by eliminating that single point of failure, I'll be able to sleep better at night, right? And so anyway, so again, look into the new and exciting features and existing features in the cloud and see how you can piece together your service offering to just fundamentally shift the way you think about developing for your business.
David.
What I've learned applies to connectivity, but it also goes broader. I think it's human nature and, you know, if you're old-time IT guys, to look for familiarity, look for commonality, look for parity with what you already know, and try to apply that to the cloud. I don't think in some cases that works at all. In a lot of cases, it won't get you to potentially the best outcome. So, you know, we went into connectivity, security, identity, some of the more fundamental areas with very solution-oriented ideas and requirements. And we actually had to take a step back and you know, peel a few layers off and figure out what is the intent behind this? What am I actually trying to do? What's motivating me to achieve this end result? And in some cases, we've forgotten what the end result was because we were just so habituated. We've been doing the same thing for 20 years.
You got to keep doing it.
We got to keep doing it. Of course, we have to, right? It works. You know, we've done a little bit of that where it made sense, and where we needed to move fast and do it in a way that it was very low risk and the time frames were compressed. But now, you know, particularly when, you know, the business and, you know, the surrounding technology is changing around us, we're having to go back to the drawing board on a lot of these things.
And the technology's changed, so that makes
and
sense.
And will continue to change.
Yeah. Great. Eric.
Yeah, I feel like there's a little bit of a theme developing here. I just really, you know, encourage folks to, you know, change your way of thinking. Don't assume anything is not possible in the cloud now. And really challenge yourself to come up with new solutions you can create for your business with the new PaaS capabilities we have out there. I mean, we can definitely gain efficiencies by moving into the IaaS model, and Ken talked about how far we've gotten with that, but we need to take the next step and, you know, look at products like, you know, Cortana Analytics, the IoT suite, SQL Data Warehouse, machine learning, and there's a whole new set of problems we can solve for our businesses with these tools, and that's where we get the big multipliers on value, right? We can come up with whole new insights, whole new classes of services that we can start to offer. So,
okay.
Let's go.
Very good. Charlie.
Yeah, so, you know, one thing is very interesting is that, you know, I work in the space I work in, which is in finance IT, you know, we're expected to keep the trains running, even though we're all supposed to be migrating to the cloud as fast as possible. So you have a lot of these complex servers, complex applications, 20 years old, 25 years old, 30 years old, very old applications that are on-prem. And And as we're migrating to cloud, it's not just you can't turn it off and say, okay, we're going to turn it off for a month and then we're going to move, and then we're going to move everything to the cloud. No, it's like literally you have to make sure all the trains are on time. You're kind of building a plane as you're flying it, is what I like to say a lot of the time. And that's the one thing that's definitely true. As a user, as our users, our businesses basically expect, you know, they expect no interruption. They're like, next day, we're in the cloud now. Oh, I didn't really know anything changed. You know, like, you know, for them, it's
that's
like,
what they want.
That's what they expected. And so, you know, the one thing about it is, you know, you don't have to move like quickly. The whole point is taking that first step. You don't have to go from a complex on-prem solution to just to PaaS, you know, overnight. You know, some of the teams in our space are going to go to IaaS first, just to get their application up, do as much as they can to basically lift and shift in some ways, or reuse what they have in IaaS. But then the expectation is to go to PaaS. So it's kind of a step-by-step process, and some teams are going to maybe switch even to SaaS further down the line. So, you know, I think it's the whole point is getting to the cloud is really important, because once you get there, moving to PaaS or moving to SaaS after IaaS is not nearly as complex or maybe as
threatening
as going from, you know, an on-prem solution to, you know, PaaS.
Okay, very good. Ken?
We've done the move to IaaS, and a lot of customers, rapid adoption of that has happened. What I'd like you to come away with is that the real value, as you've heard from all the gentlemen on stage, is the move to PaaS and to SaaS. Those will accelerate your ability to become agile, to deliver value faster, to chew up your backlog, your IT backlog faster, to be more relevant to your business and to your customers. And so that's happening right now inside Microsoft. So the faster we can get you onto PaaS and SaaS, the faster you can start unlocking your IT value for your company. That's what I'd like you to take away from this.
Okay. Very good. We are at the top of our hour. We would love to get your feedback. There are a couple of questions we ask that you answer so we know what you think about this session. I want to thank our SMEs for coming here, stepping away from your day job, to talk to our customers and answer their questions about the work that we do in IT. And I want to thank you, our customers, for joining us today. We love your questions, we love the dialogue, and we love holding these sessions for you. We will post this video on our site, microsoft.com/IT Showcase, and there is a wealth of other information out there for you. Technical case studies, articles, business case studies, other on-demand videos, as well as future live events like this SME Roundtable and other webinars for you to join. So join us again and bring your colleagues. We look forward to talking with you again. Thank you.